We are live.
All the announcements going out to bring all the Leo Lions into the Discord and all the wonderful places you can listen, YouTube, absolutely, and whatnot. It is November 29th, the last Tuesday of the month. Only 1 month left in the year coming up. Leo Finance AMA, aka The Wench Soon Show, live.
Oh, I think you're muted in Discord.
I do it every time.
Me too.
Every time. I am unmuted in this Discord as well. So now all the people can hear. I'm kind of just slow rolling till the announcement post hits, because that's generally what I feel like triggers everybody to know that we're live.
It's going out right now.
Boom. Announcements.
Yeah, so might as well jump into it since we were talking pre-show about it. We were just talking about the Cub Kingdoms, and obviously the newest Cub Kingdom is live, and that's the actual, you know, the Kingdom for Cub. We were talking about it for probably a few months, talking about adding variable staking to Cub. So we finally achieved it. The back end was actually done for a long time, but the front end needed quite a lot of work. It's got a lot of calculations in it. So, you know, if you look at the UI, it's showing you all sorts of stuff about like your Cub profit, the yield boost, it actually projects the profit before you deposit, so you know kind of what you're getting into. And then we added, actually after it went live, we added things like showing the total locked amount of Cub that was actually locked up, and then the average duration that it was locked up for. So all that stuff, I mean, it took a long time to kind of get that working right. And then, actually yesterday and the day before, we released two different updates, kind of fixing some different bugs on the UI. So like one of them was showing that the TVL was like 400,000, even though it wasn't. And then that was affecting obviously the APY displayed, cause then it's calculating APY based on TVL. Fixed all that stuff. And then, I saw a chat in Discord about yesterday about the deposits and withdrawals. And then Mitch was just mentioning it to me that he was having trouble depositing and withdrawing from some of the other Cub Kingdoms. So like the BNB Kingdom, BTC Kingdom, stuff like that. So we deployed an update for the whole Kingdoms UI yesterday. And then Mitch tried to deposit this morning and it worked. So looks like we're all good on the Kingdoms front.
Indeed, which is good. People like to be able to put their money in and take their money out.
Yep. And then last Tuesday, we talked about how we wanted to increase the yield boost curve. If you remember, so like when we launched the kingdom, the new Cub Kingdom, we actually had the yield boost at a 2x max, right? So that means if you deposited Cub and locked it for 52 weeks, you had a 2x the limit that you would get is 2x yield boost over people that were like flexible locking, for example, or flexible staking. And that wasn't intended. We actually were intending to do more like a 10x yield boost, which is closer to what PancakeSwap does. So we ended up implementing the curve, a better curve. So now the curve is, it maxes out at 11x. So if you stake Cub for 52 weeks, you have an 11x yield boost over people who flexible stake Cub, which means that they can take it out whenever they want. So right now the flexible APY is 3.14%. So if you want to stake Cub, but you want to move it around and you want to have liquidity, then you get 3.14%. And if you lock it for up to 52 weeks, you get 35% APY. So, and obviously if you do like 12 weeks, you get somewhere in between 3 and 35, just depends on where you land on that curve. The longer you stake, the higher the APY. So this is where we intended to push it, so that the APY for people who are locking in the kingdom is a lot higher than the old kingdom itself. So if you remember, before we released variable staking, the old kingdom was around 10% APY. That's what you could earn. You could not earn more. Everybody earned the same, and everyone was instantly liquid, as in there was no time staking. And the goal with this contract was to give people who staked for long periods of time more yield. And the way we did that was not by directing more inflation to the contract. It was by keeping the amount of CUB that the contract earns the same, but by adding that variable to say, if you want to keep your CUB liquid, then you should earn less than people who don't need to keep it liquid and who choose to believe in the platform and stake it longer. So I think that's a super cool feature. So, you know, there's plenty of people out there. I know I saw a bunch of threads that people posted, like One Alpha and a few other people talking about how they stake for 52 weeks. I know, Mitch, you stake some for 52 weeks. So the people who stake for 52 weeks should get the highest yield. I think that's just kind of a simple concept. And this kind of goes towards the bigger picture that CUB has moved towards. And I think the whole DeFi industry has kind of moved towards, which is real yield. So it's kind of this whole real yield movement. You know, the days of paying people thousands of percent in APY for staking assets is over. Now everything is productive capital. Everything needs to be efficiently used. So, you know, whether you're looking at CUB or Curve or Compound or, you know, whatever DeFi platform you decide to look at, MakerDAO, all of these platforms have gone towards real yield and good business models. So this is what we've kind of spent a lot of time trying to figure out with CUB, is how do we create a real business model that generates real revenue, that generates, you know, big buybacks and burns, and something that's actually functional and growing. So the mission when we launched CUB and then obviously with PolyCUB too, was to discover how we can create a platform that has reliable, growing, and consistent yields. And I think CUB has really achieved that as of late. So, you know, the CUB price has actually done pretty well relative to the rest of the market. And, you know, what's more important in my opinion is that the burn chart, I'll post a screenshot. The burn chart has been super high. So obviously if you look at like the beginning of the platform, until August 2022, which is when the multi-token bridge launched, the burns were like very small but consistent. And then when you see the bridge launch, it just literally takes off like a rocket. And now we're burning, you know, close to $500,000 CUB per month, which is pretty insane. And that number just kind of keeps growing. I think what did we burn last month? Last month we burned 350,000 CUB. This month we should burn more than that. So by the end of this month, we'll have burned more than 350,000. And I think that's just going to kind of keep growing every month. One thing I've been keeping a close eye on is the growing multi-token bridge TVL. So that's Beehive BHBD liquidity. You know, despite the market actually dropping, we're still seeing liquidity slowly increase in dollar terms. So, you know, Hive has lost pretty much like 30 to 40% of its value over the last like month. And that's from, you know, obviously all this FTX stuff, just kind of draining the crypto market. So despite all that happening, and then obviously CUB dropping a little bit since it's paired with Hive and BNB, you know, despite all of that, the TVL continues to grow. So I think that's super bullish. I think as long as we see that TVL kind of slowly grind upwards, we kind of have a positive outlook on the future of CUB, just kind of seeing that revenue grow. And the arbitrage bot has been working extremely well. But so I guess this is the first time we're announcing it, but I just hired a new dev. And I think he actually was working on some Splinterlands stuff. But then, you know, Splinterlands had a layoff of, I think like 40% of their team. A few people reached out to me after that, and just said, you know, I'm on Hive and, you know, I was working on Splinterlands and I'm looking for some work. So if you have part-time or full-time or something, they knew that Leo Finance was kind of hiring and we're still expanding the team. So this dev reached out to me and he's super talented. He showed me some of the work he's done for Splinterlands and for a bunch of other projects on Hive. And I'm very excited to see what he can do. So one thing he's working on now is Arbitrage Bot 2.0, which should be a lot more effective than the current one. And it will have a lot more, basically it's going to have a lot more routes to arbitrage through, and that should create a lot more revenue. So, let me pull up the last Cub Burn report. So the revenue last month for Cub was $8,000. It was $7,945. And we bought back and burned 350,683 Cub. From that revenue, 1,800 was from wrapping fees. 1,700 was from Oracle staking, which is like staking HBD and Hive on chain. And then the internal arbitrage generated $4,300. So that's for the month of October. This new arbitrage bot, I think, will be a lot more efficient, like ridiculously more efficient. So I think it's very feasible that we see, you know, a 2 to 4x in the monthly revenue that the arbitrage bot can generate, you know, with a better system, with better routes, with more available liquidity. I think this arbitrage bot is going to do a lot better than the one, you know, arbitrage bot 2.0 is a lot better than 1.0. And hopefully that'll be live soon. So that really, yeah. So the, you know, those three sources of revenue are really key to Cub's growth and future. So like I said, we're approaching 500,000 Cub being burned every month. And you know, with a more efficient arbitrage bot, we could see that kind of grow by a couple hundred thousand more. And then as those pools get deeper and deeper, you see the Oracle staking increase, you see the wrapping fees increase, you see the arbitrage revenue increase. So it's just kind of across the board. It's like a rising tide is raising all ships. So yeah, I've been getting very excited about Cub and what we can do. I've talked a few times about this PE ratio that I've been seeing thrown around a couple of times. And we included it in the last monthly burn report too. The PE ratio for Cub is like rivaling like blue chip dividend stocks. So that's the, you know, the price to earnings ratio. So like basically the ratio of the revenue that Cub is generating each month relative to the market cap of Cub is super bullish. So it's generating a lot of revenue based on its market cap, and that revenue keeps increasing, and the market cap hasn't been increasing. So I think it's been increasing slightly, but not by a lot. So that just makes the PE ratio lower, and a lower PE ratio indicates, you know, high revenue per share. So, you know, that's bullish. It's kind of an interesting metric because you can look at it a few different ways. One way you can look at it is that a low PE ratio shows that there's very little speculation in the market. So I don't think people are speculating on Cub right now. I don't think there's a lot of buyers out there that are interested in speculating on Cub at the moment. So that could be looked at as a negative in terms of PE ratio. But the positive of it is that the fundamental value of the platform and creating a valuation metric for the platform based on, you know, earnings per share is kind of a, you know, a time tested way to value anything. So that's something I'm excited to see kind of grow and mature, because we're still only, you know, we launched it in August, the BHBD Beehive stuff, and you know, we're only at the end of November, so it really hasn't been that long. And then, you know, something I've loosely announced is the Beehive BHBD bonds. So, I mean, we could talk about that if anyone has questions, but it's looking like it's something that we're going to kind of test out with some small amounts and kind of see how it goes. But essentially, you'll be able to single stake. We're basically going to launch two new kingdoms, essentially, and you'll be able to single stake Beehive and BHBD and earn yield. So you won't have to LP them. But on the back end, we will be LPing them. So it's kind of similar to, I haven't talked about it a whole lot, but it's kind of similar to ThorChain's single-sided staking model that they actually released, you know, just a few weeks ago, where you can stake like native Bitcoin and native Ethereum and earn yield without LPing. So that's kind of similar to what we're going to be doing with these Cub bonds for Beehive and BHBD. So it's not the same bonding system that we were working on for Polycub, you know, I kind of realized some you know, pitfalls in that design. So this is a different design. It's kind of based off of the variable staking model that we just released for Cub, kind of taking that model and turning it into a bond for single staking Beehive and BHPD. The whole goal there is to get more usage for those derivatives, right? Cub has turned into a derivatives platform for Hive and HPD trading. And if we can get more people using those derivatives, more people buying Hive, buying HPD through Binance Smart Chain, and then obviously wrapping and unwrapping it and just utilizing it. Utility is everything there. So if we can build up more utility, then we're going to see it take off.
I am typing away with all this good information to put into the recap post. All the good things. That'll be cool in regard to the bonding, aka single staking, because I mean,
yeah,
there's plenty of people that, you know, want to continue to hold their Hive bag, but not have to worry about impermanent loss. So it'll be interesting to see what those yields look like, because obviously, you know, you can earn a yield on your Hive just having it powered up. But
right,
the flip side of this is, you know, there's no lockup period. Well, there is, because actually, yeah. So these are going to be more like a bonding style. So there will be a lockup period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
You'll be able to choose a lockup period.
Gotcha. So at least it gives you more flexibility than, you know, kind of one and done choice with powering up your Hive.
Right. But, and then the one thing is that there will be a kind of similar to the, if you just take the Cub Kingdom that we just launched and kind of imagine that you could do Beehive and BHPD in a similar kingdom, that's probably the best way to look at it. So you will be able to stake, you know, Hive or HPD by itself and earn some yield and have instant liquidity, which is kind of cool because, for example, like you can stake Hive on chain, but then you're staking it for 13 weeks and you might not want to. Like maybe you bought Hive for a short-term trade and you're planning on selling it after it, you know, goes up 2 to 5% or whatever. You're going to take some profits.
Are you literally talking about me right now?
So you want to keep it liquid, but you don't want to, you know, you don't want to LP it, let's say, because if you LP Beehive against Cub or Beehive against BHPD and you're right on your trade and the Hive price goes up, then you're actually going to be slowly selling Hive into the LP. That's how impermanent loss works, right? So if you want to make a short-term trade on Hive, you could buy, this is the whole idea, is that you could buy Beehive instead of buying Hive itself, because it's obviously a derivative, and you buy Beehive, and then it, while you're waiting for yourself to be right, you could stake it in a single stake place, and you can choose how long you want to lock it up for. So maybe you want to lock it up for 1 week because you think it'll take a week for you to be right, or maybe you don't want to lock it up at all. So you put it in the flex staking option, which keeps it instantly liquid, and you might earn, you know, you might only earn like 3% APY on that Beehive. Kind of like if you look at the current Cub Kingdom. So maybe you're only earning 3% APY, but you have instant liquidity on that Hive and you can instantly take it. You don't have any impermanent loss. You have instant liquidity. You can instantly withdraw it and then sell it for a profit when it goes up, if that was your intention with the trade. And something that we haven't talked about, but what's on the roadmap for Cub now is all sorts of derivative options, which basically just create more utility for Beehive and BHPD. So another one is going to be the ability to short Hive and HPD through Cub. And I think that's a super cool option. And you know, it's like we're basically just trying to create more ways that Beehive and BHPD can be utilized, because that ultimately just generates more revenue and usage for the platform and buyback and burns, obviously, for Cub.
That's pretty badass. It's like, because, you know, I guess more so as a quote unquote trader, you know, I like to be able to play both sides. So the ability to short, or at least have short exposure to Hive, is enticing to me, because there's always opportunities. You know, obviously Hive generally can and does move with the overall crypto market. So cool stuff.
Yeah, I think it just has a lot to do with creating that utility. And, you know, as we drive more usage to the Beehive BHPD derivatives, we're just going to see that revenue explode. So like I said, last month it was like 8,000. And, you know, this month, hopefully it'll be a little bit higher. And we just kind of see it, like if you look at the last couple months, you just kind of see it slowly grinding up, right? And right now, if you do the math, let's do some quick live on air math. There's 840,000 cub that's created every month. That's through the one cub. There's one cub per block that's created and 840,000 blocks per month on the Binance Smart Chain. So you take that and the current cub price is like 0.021. So there's $17,640 worth of cub that is created every single month, right? And that's, you know, current price. And obviously one cub per block is constant. It's a static inflationary rate for cub. So if the multi-token bridge generates more than $17,600, that means that we're buying back more cub than is created every month. And I think that's super bullish. I mean, we'll just be eating away at the supply of cub at that point. At that point, you could call cub deflationary. And then obviously the price either has to move to adapt to that, or the price stays low and we stay deflationary for a while. So, you know, there's kind of the flip side to that where, you know, you actually may want the price to stay low so that the buyback and burns can eat up whatever supply we've created over the last 18 months. So I think that's cool. It's seeing that we can generate $8,000 in revenue every single month, just from, like, I think there's 650,000 in multi-token bridge TVL right now, is pretty insane. I mean, you just imagine, like, if we could build that to 6 million, we'll be generating, you know, $80,000 per month in multi-token bridge revenue, which is just, I mean, that's like, and to keep cub, like, let's just say that the inflation was zero, which means that we're buying back as much cub as produced. If we're generating $80,000 per month, that is a 4.5x in cub price from where we are right now, to stay inflation net neutral, which basically just means that the multi-token bridge is buying back as much cub as created in dollar terms per month. So those kind of fundamental valuation metrics that you probably thought you would never apply to something like cub are now being, you know, applicable because it's generating real revenue every single day. It's not future revenue. It's not a promise of future revenue, promise of future growth. It's a, you know, it's a real thing that you can value day by day. And I think that's super cool. I think that's kind of where, and this, I mean, this could take us into a broader discussion, but I think that's kind of where the whole crypto and traditional tech industry is moving right now. I think a lot of companies are being valued now on current cash flows. And, you know, there's less weight being put into future growth and technological adoption versus before. You know, when we were in like a free money society where there was just like so much inflation, so much free capital flowing around, you just saw companies and startups and places like FTX, like being able to raise billions and billions of dollars without, you know, even giving any sort of term sheet or anything with VCs. And the reason why is just because there was so much free money out there. But now that the free money is gone, you know, all that excess inflation and free money and all the returns that people were chasing after are just gone. I mean, it's like, it's gone. And that's because of interest rates. I mean, like the free earnings ratio is just so high now that like you can earn like 5% by putting your money in a bond. So why are companies or why are institutions like BlackRock going to throw money at tech, you know, startups where they could lose everything? And then obviously seeing the blow up of things like FTX is scary for them.
Big dynamic shift. I was actually reading an article earlier today. I was talking about like credit and kind of credit cycles. And although it's impossible to predict them, you can at least gauge, you know, the environment. And yeah, we've had that shift. And it went from easy money and all you had to do is, you know, sneeze a business plan onto a napkin, you can raise millions of dollars. And now it's like, nope. Things are tightened up, you know, everything from, you know, raising venture capital, but even to like commercial lending, you know, a lot of these commercial real estate deals, the requirements have tightened up because it's no longer risk on. And, you know, as lending standards tighten up, that obviously, you know, chokes, so to speak, potential growth or, you know, just the free flow of money. So it's been interesting to see. And I'm more paying attention to the credit markets than I am the economy on a whole, because I think the credit markets are a bigger catalyst, so to speak. But yep, this is when you find out who the real players are. No more free money.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's the thing, like, you got to generate revenue, or you got to generate, like, even if you think about crypto and like the DeFi space, it's like, what was any of this predicated on? It was predicated on just more capital coming in. You know what I mean? Like, what was the use case for almost any DeFi coin? You know, it's like, what does this do? What does it generate? What's it used for? And like, that was always the problem. So
right,
you gotta be able to generate revenue. Even if it's like a self-fulfilling in-house type of revenue. So you're providing some kind of service or, you know, function. And even if that's just within your little ecosystem, if people are using that and it's generating revenue, then you have something sustainable. So,
right.
You know, the revenue growth for, you know, Cub DeFi, it's probably going to be generally slow until it hits some kind of tipping point. But either way, I just don't see how it's really going to be shrinking, you know, unless for some reason, you know, TVL drops and people start doing less transactions. But that would probably be surprising to me. I think that growth is going to continue, especially now that there's a fundamental aspect, so to speak, to the platform in regards to revenue growth and just business from a traditional standpoint.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do, I like what you were saying about, you know, it can happen kind of within your own smaller ecosystem. Like, that's really what Cub is doing, right? It's servicing a technically a pretty small audience with Beehive and BHBD. You know, it's servicing the Hive ecosystem and you know, a lot of Leo Finance users. But that being said, you know, it's, I think using those metrics like, you know, PE ratio are really valuable because, you know, even if the earnings, you know, if you look at like a company, right, and just say that that company's making $8,000 a month, that's like nothing. I mean, that's like a drop in the bucket. But when you look at $8,000 being generated per month against a company that's only worth $400,000, which is, you know, Cub's current market cap is $400,000, $8,000 per month starts to look like a lot against that market cap. And then, you know, if that revenue keeps growing every month and the market cap stays constant, then that price to earnings ratio just keeps getting better and better. And the you know, the fundamental valuation of that token just keeps getting better and better. That's what I find kind of fascinating about this shift away from the, you know, the old news of you know, free money floating out there and towards something that's like a real fundamental valuation.
You just have to have some kind of sustainability, which
right.
didn't really exist a year or two ago in the DeFi space, I think on a whole. Nifty actually read my mind. I was thinking about this earlier, which is funny because obviously I don't think it's a well-kept secret that I'm much heavier on my Cub holdings than I am Polycub, but that is a good question. Polycub for a while was the main focus. Of late, Cub's been obviously getting more of the focus and love, but what is going on with Polycub? He asked if there's anything new coming.
Yeah, a lot of our development is kind of in this stack, right? I've talked about it in this vertical stack, where when we build a contract for something like Cub or Polycub, we can you know, migrate it to the other one pretty easily. So like, for example, BHBD and Beehive weren't the first, right? It was PHBD and Pehive. And the development of that is what eventually led to the release of it on Cub, on the Binance Smart Chain. So, you know, that being able to develop things that kind of go back and forth is really interesting to me. We tried to propose a, you know, one issue that I see with Polycub is that, you know, I actually think the monthly deflationary rate, you know, are basically where we're dropping the inflation rate every month. I actually think that's become a detriment to the platform. We've seen a lot of TVL basically flee Polycub because the APYs keep getting lower and lower. And I don't think it's sustainable to say that we're going to be, you know, able to keep good APYs that are high enough to keep any sort of capital on Polycub that's worthwhile in terms of, you know, what we initially envisioned with the whole buyback and distribute to Vex Polycub idea. So the proposal that we tried to put up was to keep the, was basically to stop the monthly halvenings for the time being and keep the Polycub per block at point. It was 0.0625 Polycub per block that we were trying to keep it at. And that proposal didn't get voted through by X Polycub and Vex Polycub holders. So the proposal didn't get voted.
I feel like it was winning.
It was winning. And then basically, you know, once one big stakeholder has the swing vote and chose not to.
One big whale came in and said, I'm not feeling it.
Right. So there's, you know, there's an issue I see, which is that, you know, I think one issue that we created with the governance on Polycub is that we've kind of misaligned the incentives. So as an X and Vex Polycub holder, your incentives are aligned with having a very low inflation rate because you're already holding a lot of Polycub. You don't want to see more inflation that technically dilutes your stake. So you have a misaligned incentive with the platform to say that the platform actually wants to have some inflation because it needs to pay LPs in order to attract, you know, PHPD and PHIVE capital. So, you know, that's a problem that I see right now with Polycub. We're working on a revamped version of the proposal because I guess, you know, a few of these whales that said that they didn't want the proposal to get pushed through felt that it was like, you know, quick, you know, it was like released really quickly, which I don't feel like it was, but, you know, it was released too quickly and, you know, wasn't talked about enough and there weren't enough details of, you know, what the future would look like. Really, the proposal was just, hey, let's keep the inflation rate at 0.0625. Let's try to keep some capital on Polycub, some PHPD and PHIVE, and, you know, try to regrow this thing and maybe create a variable inflationary rate where the, you know, the DAO votes on it, say once a month or once every few months, maybe once a quarter, and, you know, reevaluates and says, look, we don't have enough PHPD and PHIVE. We need to increase the incentives that we're paying out. Or maybe we have, you know, we have sufficient PHPD PHIVE and maybe we're overpaying for what we've got. So maybe let's lower the inflationary rate a little bit. I think adding some dynamic to that is important. And, you know, that's not to say that Polycub hasn't been a focus. I think we're focused pretty intently on getting this new proposal out and trying to get it voted through by the X and Vex Polycub holders. But until that proposal gets pushed through, I all we've seen is a fleeing of PHPD and PHIVE from Polycub, which is hurting the platform, obviously, because the platform's not generating as much revenue. So you see Cub generating all this revenue because it has the static inflation rate. It's paying, you know, 25 to 35% APY to BHPD BHIVE LPs. And, you know, I think if we had a similar amount of APY getting paid on PHPD PHIVE, we would start to see that same type of growth on Polycub. So, you know, if I take a step back and say what, you know, we're focused on, you know, me, the Solidity devs and, you know, the people working on the Cub and Polycub UIs, basically our DeFi team, what we're working on is, you know, we're focused on making Cub kind of like the showcase that, yes, having a pretty high, because Cub has a pretty high inflationary rate. I mean, we're printing 840,000 Cub per month, but it's a static inflationary rate. And the revenue has been growing. And like I was doing, you know, that on-air math, the revenue has been growing towards that inflationary rate. And we're actually, you know, I mean, flipping it is like within months, in my opinion, just looking at, you know, the past few months of growth for BHIVE, BHBD and, you know, kind of projecting that out. So if we're able to prove that's kind of where I'm at is we're trying to prove that what we envisioned for BHBD BHIVE and PHBD PHIVE is actually working on Cub. And if we can prove that it's working on Cub, then we can, you know, basically convince X and Vex Polycub holders to vote this proposal through, which will let us do the same plan on Polycub. So, you know, I don't think it's surprising that the Polycub price hasn't done that well lately. I don't think it's surprising that a lot of capital has fled. You know, I think like $50,000 worth of PHPD USDC capital left Polycub over the last 30 days. It's I don't think it's that surprising. I think that people are chasing yields in some sort of ways, and Cub has a lot better yield than Polycub. So I really want to see that proposal get pushed through. And, you know, coinciding with that, there you know, taking a lot of the work we're doing on Cub and just basically having it ready to go for PolyCub for whenever this proposal goes through, I think is going to be really important.
Good updates. It's funny because I'm thinking about communication. It's just like, sometimes that's all it comes down to, because you got to remember it's human beings that are voting.
Right.
And, you know, you were talking about how more clarity was desired, more communication on that. And, you know, whether that even logically makes sense or not, doesn't even matter. It's you know, reality. It's a thing. And in a way, I kind of agree with it because, yeah, even though I voted in favor for it, it made sense to me. You know, I didn't even realize it was going on until, what was it? It was 2 days left to vote. And it happened to come up somehow on it in, you know, on one of these AMAs. And I was like, wait, what? So clearly, for some reason, that proposal word just didn't really get out on it. And I guess there wasn't enough, you know, kind of roadmap description when it came to, you know, what it means after the fact and what the game plan is. So in the end, you know, just an opportunity to do it better the next time around.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we're doing. You know, I'm working with the team to put together a much more detailed proposal, and then we'll make a bunch of posts about it. You know, I did feel like we talked about the first one a lot, but, you know, clearly we could have made more posts, more threads, more updates about it. So that's what we're doing on the PolyCub front.
Yeah. And I think things like that, like obviously, you know, this is the announcement room and Discord, which will ping everybody. But you know how it is. It's like you almost have to force feed a little bit. So, you know, things like that, obviously in announcements and even whatever post, you know, when there's a post for it, even dropping it in general, you know, here and there, and just kind of having like reminders, you know, I don't know if that's something that, you know, one of the other team members can kind of more be on top of in terms of like, you know, no different than when there's a vote for anything, you know, like obviously, you know, the midterm elections just happened here in the States. It's obviously, you know, in your face all the time, you know, don't forget to vote. And this is the election time. This is, you know, so kind of that similar thing where you got, you know, a lead up into a vote, you know, the week before or whatever, especially just really kind of blasting the whole rock the vote vibe.
Yeah. We're going to do a big, big update for this one. A lot of threads, a lot of tweets, a lot of posts, and then we'll give everyone, you know, I'm thinking we're going to give everyone a 7-day window to vote. So there are no excuses this time.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, thinking out loud, I mean, there is another proposal that I have in mind that I obviously haven't talked about, but one other idea I've had is actually kind of doing a merger of PolyCub and Cub. This would be kind of a big deal, big proposal to put together, but kind of maybe turning PolyCub into what it should have been, which is a spinoff of Cub, not a spinoff of Cub, but an actual, you know, an actual, basically a wrapped token of Cub instead of creating a new token. So yeah, that's what Nifty's saying, basically pay PolyCub yield and Cub. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple different ideas I have out there, of what we could do. One of them would be to basically replace the PolyCub token with a wrapped version of Cub, and have the Cub DAO basically buy enough Cub to basically airdrop Cub to anyone who holds PolyCub now, or essentially create a way that you could exchange your PolyCub for Cub. But obviously we're not going to create any more Cub than is being, you know, the one Cub per block will never change. We're not creating any more Cub. So the DAO, basically this strategy would be, all right, we're going to start taking say 10% of the revenue every month and buying Cub and putting it in a separate wallet. And that Cub will be available to be converted with PolyCub. And then we would basically slowly get rid of the PolyCub token. And now you would have like wrapped Cub on the Polygon network. And then we would divert, say, like 5 to 10% of the inflation on Cub BSC to Polygon. And this was something that, you know, we talked about a little bit before PolyCub launched. And it was an idea that was floating around, but, you know, we kind of flipped back and forth on it. And, you know, looking back on the launch of Polycub and everything, I think one mistake we made was probably not fleshing out this idea enough of actually just doing a wrapped version of Cub versus a whole new token. I think splitting off into a new token was probably a mistake at the outset. So I mean, we have a lot of options. That's the key, is that we have a lot of options, and it's really just about finding a model that works and then finding the best way to implement it. I think with Cub, I think with Polycub, we actually found the model that works. You know, at one point we had almost $500,000 in that PHBD USDC pool. But as those yields dropped every single month, you know, now we only have like $30,000 in that pool. So the yields just keep dropping and people keep leaving. But now Cub has, you know, $275,000 in the BHBD BUSD pool, and that amount keeps growing. And then obviously you've got the BHBD Beehive, you've got BHBD Cub, Beehive Cub, and those pools keep growing. And I think we're kind of proving that the model works when you have a static inflationary rate. So, you know, that's really going forward. What I think the focus is going to be is proving that the model works on Cub, proving that we can generate more revenue than we're creating in terms of inflation, you know, turning it deflationary, buying back and burning a lot of Cub. And then, you know, from there, we'll kind of implement it on Polycub.
I'm kind of like thinking about what you're talking about in terms of the potential, like, Cub payouts and or merger type thing while I was obviously typing the recap, but it's definitely something that I think everyone, including myself, would have to definitely dig into and think about. I'm sure there's pros and cons to both, but
yeah, I mean, it's something that's just, you know, loosely thought about, but
oh yeah, interesting idea for sure. I mean, and you know, if it comes to, you know, fruition, so to speak, in terms of that being like a legitimate idea, obviously all that information will get shared, and I'm assuming most likely some kind of vote.
Yeah, for sure
that's always interesting with different blockchains and whatnot. But
yeah, well, and I started thinking about it because Dolls actually posted in one of our private channels about how we should launch a Cub outpost on Ethereum. You know, obviously we had that huge outpost idea to kind of launch on all these different blockchains, and then we backburned that. And I do think it's interesting, like now that Ethereum fees are so low, we could launch Cub on Ethereum. But I don't think it's smart after seeing how Polycub did to launch, you know, new tokens on every single blockchain. So what I think is a better idea is, you know, as the Cub DAO grows, and obviously we, you know, this is not going to happen anytime in the near future, we need to see BHBD and Beehive liquidity grow. And, you know, I really am targeting that kind of like 5-6 million TVL for BHBD and Beehive liquidity. Cause you know, generating $80,000 a month in revenue for Cub would be, you know, astronomical for the value of the token. So that's the focus now, but, you know, assuming that we reach that one day, then we could say, put it to a DAO vote and say, let's launch a wrapped Cub on Ethereum and create, you know, a spinoff platform, and then divert like 5-10% of Cub inflation to paying for, you know, WHBD and WHive liquidity. And then we build liquidity over there. But, you know, some people might say, okay, well, what value does it have for Cub? Well, since now there's only one Cub token, but you're wrapping it to other blockchains, all the revenue that WHBD and WHive generate is going to buy back and burn the Cub token. So this is like a singular Cub universe where all the revenue generated on all the outposts goes back to burning Cub, buying Cub and burning it.
That piece makes a lot of sense because you're still touching on all the blockchains, but it's one token, which honestly, right. I mean, kind of like everything else, you know, you have wrapped everything, you know, wrapped Bitcoin on all different platforms, let's say. So you're not spreading out demand and use of that token just individually, like for each platform. You just have one coin to rule them all.
Yep, exactly.
I like
one
that
cub,
idea.
One Cub to rule them all.
Because, I mean, getting on the Ethereum blockchain makes a ton of sense because, I mean, the reality is, where's the most capital on in terms of any blockchain? Pretty much Ethereum. So in regards to, you know, dApps and small contracts and all the things. So I would love to see Cub with exposure on the Ethereum blockchain. I am all for that one, just because that's where the money's at still to this day.
100%.
So, but yeah, if we do that with a wrapped, W Cub, I'm with it. That's actually probably a great idea.
I think it's a great idea. If you think about it, the arbitrage between the WHBD, WHive pools, then you've got the BHBD, BHive pools. You're basically just creating more and more revenue mechanisms that are all going back to burn, buy back and burn the same Cub token. So yes, you might be taking a little bit of yield away from the current Cub platform, but then you're moving that yield into a high impact area that can generate revenue, and that revenue comes back and buys and burns Cub. So basically, like, if you do some simple math, obviously a lot of work, you know, keeping a lot of variables equal, but if you do some simple math and you say, all right, let's divert 10% of Cub BSC inflation to W Cub on Ethereum and pay, you know, WHive and WHBD LPs over there. If that, you know, you can do some very fun, and this is all going back to the conversation we've been having for, you know, the last 30 minutes, which is, if you do all the math on that and you say that, you know, say 10% of Cub inflation, like right now it's $18,000 per month. That's how much Cub inflation there is. So say 10% of that is $1,800 per month. So you can do some very fundamental math and say, by diverting $1,800 per month to W Cub and paying the WHBD, WHive LPs, can WHBD and WHive generate more than $1,800 per month in revenue? And if they can, then it's obviously a good idea, because then they're generating more than that in revenue, and that revenue is coming back, buy back and burn Cub. Cub price goes up more than 10%. And now that inflation kind of balances itself out, whereas, you know, like, you're not really taking anything away then from current Cub LPs on BSC. You're potentially adding if that revenue is more, because if the price increases more than 10%, then now the APY actually goes up. It doesn't go down from you taking 10% of the yield and pushing it to Ethereum. So this is kind of something, after Dal said that, is kind of something I've been lightly, you know, ruminating on in the background. But like I said, the big focus right now, amongst like all of the things we're doing, is growing the BHBD BHive liquidity. I think we have a lot of work to do to grow the liquidity for these derivatives. And, you know, I would love to see more, you know, support on the Hive ecosystem front of getting people, you know, to wrap Hive, wrap HBD, and provide liquidity and help us build up these derivatives, especially in the wake of FTX. I think it's more important than ever, and I've talked about this so many times, but it's more important than ever that we get Hive and HBD off of centralized exchanges and create, you know, hundreds of derivatives that are, you know, not just, you know, Leo Finance Cub derivatives, but like from other projects and, you know, all sorts of an internal market volume. Like, it's just so important to do for Hive and HBD right now. So, you know, the vast majority of Hive and HBD is held on centralized exchanges. It's kind of crazy if you think about it. You know, the amount that's actually floating out there on those exchanges is astronomical. And if Binance, like, let's just say Binance were to shut down Hive trading, you know, I would say probably like more than half of all people on Hive trade Hive through Binance, or, you know, through the, you know, Mandala, Binance Cloud type of stuff. You know, a lot of people are using that. And, you know, we're at the whims of CZ and Binance, who have kind of already shown that they might not like us that much. And they already took off HBD. Keep that in mind. There used to be SBD trading on Binance, and HBD never got listed there. Only Hive did.
Yeah, there's not many options for Hive and HBD in terms of centralized exchanges.
So, but got to build the decentralized liquidity.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Decentralized exchanges are becoming more and more popular, especially obviously within the crypto space. But yeah, when it comes to normies, so to speak, centralized exchanges is still where it's at. I mean, and to an extent, really the only choice. I mean, I just onboarded a normie into the crypto world over the weekend. You know, they bought their first amount of Bitcoin. They've been talking about it for a while. So it's just like, in the end, you know, it's like, let's just open a Coinbase account and connect your bank account and buy your Bitcoin. And then once it clears, we're going to send it to your own wallet, though. We're not going to leave it sitting on the exchange. But, you know, that's just how it's going to be until there's an opportunity with decentralized exchanges where it's, you know, easy for the everyday user. Absolutely. Especially when it comes to getting, you know, fiat dollars. So using DeFi isn't too hard once you already have the money in crypto. But, and I know more and more options are being developed, but we're still quite a ways away from that becoming anything becoming a household name. So, yeah, as Nifty said, buying Hive in the US is torture.
Yeah. That is not
100%
wrong.
Yes. In a hypothetical world, there's sites like Mexi that you can VPN on and buy Hive in a hypothetical world.
Hypothetically.
Yes, hypothetically. But all I know, they got one hell of a recap written up. We covered all sorts of shit.
Yeah, love that.
This might be one of the longest recaps I've written in a while. And I don't even like get everything because... anyway, I'd say, you know, general crypto market talk to wrap things up, but there really ain't much to talk about. Whole lot of nothing over the last couple of weeks, which might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, it seems like we're kind of all quiet on the crypto front right now. I think a lot of people are, you know, just going on. Well, I guess there has been some news. So, BlockFi filed bankruptcy.
I was just going to mention that the crypto market's quiet despite things, you know, blowing up.
Right. So we're seeing a lot of funds, a lot of, you know, people that were exposed to FTX, and, you know, FTX had their hands in a lot of cookie jars. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of different, you know, funds and applications blowing up. I had a few, normies that I onboarded into crypto that sent me emails that they got from BlockFi, this morning about, you know, their chapter 11 filing, that they filed for bankruptcy. So I saw some numbers out there. I'm just going to go off the top of my head. I don't know if they're true, but, BlockFi is about $250 million worth of, user deposits is locked on the platform. It can't be withdrawn. I know some people who have a few thousand dollars here and there on the platform. I don't know anyone that has like a lot of money on there. I'd say probably the most was like 5,000 that somebody had on there, that they can't get. And then, I obviously was a big user of BlockFi. You know, I've talked about it a few different times. I'm a big fan of Bitcoin collateralized loans, and I have some on MakerDAO. I have some on Coinbase, and I had some on BlockFi. I had a pretty big one on BlockFi. After the whole Three Arrows Capital thing a few months ago, I got a little bit scared. I looked at everything and I was like, this, you know, doesn't seem right. So, you know, a few weeks back, but probably more like 1 or 2 months back now, I actually went out and closed my collateralized loan on BlockFi and withdrew everything that I had on there, which was very fortunate. Yeah, very fortunate timing for me. I still believe in Bitcoin collateralized loans, but now I have some doubts about doing it through centralized exchanges. I know that that's, you know, I always had my doubts. I always knew that there was a risk. So my collateralized loans on something like a MakerDAO is always going to be a lot bigger than my one through something like BlockFi or Coinbase. I think Coinbase is, you know, I know that there's a lot of questions out there about Coinbase being, you know, the next BlockFi, but I do think Coinbase is, you know, they're a publicly traded company. They've been around in the space longer than anybody else. BlockFi is only a few years old, and they obviously weren't publicly traded. So to say that Coinbase is like BlockFi, I think it's like, you know, it's like calling a Volkswagen a semi truck. It's like it's two totally different things, right? Yeah, they both have four wheels, or not necessarily, but they both have wheels. They have steering wheels. They drive, but they're two totally different monsters to deal with. So, that's just my opinion. I don't think Coinbase is going anywhere, but at the same time, I probably wouldn't be super surprised if something happened. And I saw a metric that like $6 billion worth of Bitcoin has been withdrawn from Coinbase in the last like 2 weeks.
Damn,
I gotta confirm that.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it this way, right? At some point, like, the doom and gloom, you know, view has to end in terms of,
right,
like, if Coinbase is going under, then it's like, all right, the entire centralized crypto, you know, industry is going under, right? It's like you have basically Coinbase and Binance, right? Those are your two big pillars. So it's just like, at this point, it's like, those are your two big players. So they're probably going to be all right. And it's like, the odds of them going under are much lower, I think. But yeah, like you said, the fact that they're publicly traded gives you a sense of security, even though obviously, you know, hashtag Enron. So even when you're publicly traded, anything can happen. And that's the one thing that I always try to remember with investing. And this is more so from my equity trading days. It's like, anything can happen and nothing has to happen. So, and that's why it's called investing, because there's investment risk. So there's risk to everything. If you don't want to take, if you don't want to take on any risk, then, you know, sit in stable coin or sit in cash.
Yeah.
Technically you'd have to sit in cash and you're still technically risking your purchasing power.
Coins.
Yeah. I mean, stable coins, technically there's a risk as well.
Right. Right. So Coinbase, since November 24th, has seen $3.5 billion worth of Bitcoin withdrawn.
Wow. So
it's a lot of Bitcoin. Yeah, like you were saying, I mean, there's counterparty risk to like almost everything. I mean, the only way you're actually safe is having a cold wallet that you fully control and putting your Bitcoin in it, in terms of being, if you want exposure to crypto, but you don't want any sort of counterparty risk, that is your only choice. Because if you're using a stable coin, you still have risk, right? You can throw that in a wallet, in a cold wallet, and let it sit there. But you still have risk. I would, if I were just holding dollars, I wasn't pooling them, I wasn't trying to earn yield on them or anything, I would hold them in a US or similar equivalent bank account that is, you know, federally regulated. Other than that, if I'm going to be in crypto, I'm going to hold Bitcoin, I'm going to put it on a cold wallet. That's the only way I feel safe. And, you know, obviously as a Hive user and, you know, stuff like that, I do believe in HBD. I do believe in Hive. So I would probably hold some of that directly on chain and also in a cold wallet, which I do. You know, that's a little bit more speculative because you're betting on, you know, a certain piece of technology, you know, that isn't the size of Bitcoin. And, you know, like I was saying, what's that?
I was going to say, what was the number, the withdrawal number on Coinbase you had said?
3.5 billion since November 24th.
That's just in Bitcoin?
Just in Bitcoin, yeah.
Last
three days.
3.5 billion? Million
yeah,
or billion?
3.5 billion. Billion, yeah.
That's insane.
Wow. And it says all exchanges lost 15 billion over that same period of time.
I mean, I take that as a good thing, though, because that means we're off exchange, which means that Bitcoin is probably not getting sold.
Right. I mean, it's not, and that's the, you know, I told that metric to somebody recently, you know, yesterday or something, and they said, oh, there's that much Bitcoin getting sold. And I said, no, that's not Bitcoin getting sold. It's Bitcoin getting moved off the exchange. So it's actual, like you had one Bitcoin on Coinbase and you withdrew it into like a Ledger hardware wallet or something. That's Bitcoin getting withdrawn, not Bitcoin getting sold to cash and then cash getting withdrawn. So yeah, that's it's super interesting. And, you know, one thing I was going to say is I still do the Bitcoin collateralized loans. I still have one on Coinbase. I have been thinking lately, maybe I would close it out. But it's small enough to the point where, you know, if Coinbase were to go under, we're going to probably see a lot of crypto liquidation anyways. You know, I mean, Bitcoin could easily drop sub 10K. So the way I see it is that if that is like a huge black swan event, I'm willing to lose what I have on there, which was very different than BlockFi. I obviously looked at BlockFi much differently than I look at Coinbase. That being said, I still have the collateralized loans also on DeFi platforms. So MakerDAO is where I have probably my biggest one. There has been some FUD lately about WBTC. And I've been kind of catching up on some research with WBTC. Obviously, if you are doing the collateralized loans on MakerDAO, you're not using actual native Bitcoin, which is something that I don't like. but it, you don't really have a choice. So you're actually using WBTC to do it, which sucks. So, you know, if WBTC were to blow up, obviously that would blow up. All those loans would get liquidated. WBTC depegged for a little while there was some FUD floating around. I think it was mostly due, from what I read, I think it was mostly due to just a huge influx of people getting worried about WBTC, and a few whales. There was like, they were tracking like a few whales sold like $10 million+ worth of WBTC in a matter of hours, and it caused a short-term depeg, but then we quickly regained it. You know, that's always a risk that's out there. And then there was some interesting FUD about WETH, and people were saying, oh, WETH is going to depeg too, which is really funny because it actually was mostly a meme. It was a joke. If you look at how WETH works, and you know how it works, it's much different than something like WBTC. There's no custodian. There's no one holding ETH so that you can have WETH. It's all in a smart contract. So when you want WETH, you convert Ethereum into one WETH. And then when you go back, you have to burn one WETH to get the ETH back from the contract. There is no centralized custodian out there holding Ethereum. So that's a totally different thing. The risk with that is like if there's a bug in the WETH contract, which is always possible, but WETH has been around for a long time. WETH has been audited by literally every crypto auditing firm out there, and obviously individual devs, and it's all open source. People have looked into it six ways from Sunday. So I have no concerns over WETH. I do have some small concern over WBTC, but not enough to pull my money out of it yet. I know I heard Neil McSpadden pulled his. What was the other? So the other thing that we're basically just talking about crypto blowups right now. The other thing that I think some people are concerned about is in these proceedings with things like BlockFi and FTX and all these different firms and companies that have blown up, there's going to be in bankruptcy court, you know, they're going to be liquidating assets, right, to pay debts. So, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned with what amount of crypto is going to get sold, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, in order to pay debts that are potentially owed, you know, things like FTX and whatever. What that's going to be.
Freaking think about the Mt. Gox. Bitcoin is still like being sold, still out there, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, we're 10 years later, pretty much.
Yeah. That's the flip side, right? It's like, it could literally take 10 years. It could take 10 years.
I feel bad for any of these, like, you know, creditors that, you know, are potentially going to get some kind of recovery from any of these centralized exchanges, because you're looking at years.
Yeah.
Like, we'll be in the next bull market by the time, like, which might work out for them.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're forced holders then. Yeah. So that's the flip side, right? Like it could literally take 10 years for this whatever crypto is out there to hit the market from these bankruptcy filings. I saw something that BlockFi sold all the crypto that they were holding on customers' behalfs into dollars to like pay debt, or I think it was to support themselves through the bankruptcy filings and proceedings, pay legal fees and whatever. It was like $250 million worth of Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever that they were holding. So, I mean, we've already seen the market impact of that. So, I mean, I think you've already seen a lot of liquidations. And one thing I'm wondering, which is potentially a bullish scenario, is, you know, we dropped from 21K down to 15. And, you know, yeah, Nomad Soul saying the bottom is in. You know, that's the bullish scenario, is like, typically with liquidations in crypto, they happen all at once. It's like you snap your finger, everything blows up. You have that huge wick down. Everyone gets liquidated, right? And then things settle out, you know, they find a new bottom, and then you can slowly rebuild from there. And I know that maybe a lot of people were saying that after the Three Arrows Capital Luna crash, but, you know, that crash, because of FTX, that crash was not fully felt, you know? So like, imagine, like, a lot of people are saying, like, if you've looked into this FTX scenario enough, the actual blow up of FTX happened about 3 or 4 months ago when Three Arrows Capital went down. That's when, you know, SBF was out there offering lines of credit. He actually was buying companies like BlockFi so that he could take the user assets that they had on their balance sheet and force them to move it to FTX's platform. So like a company like BlockFi, they had however hundreds of millions of dollars. SPF forced them to take all their user deposits and custody them on FTX. Knowing that FTX had blown up already, SPF went out and bought all these, you know, Voyager Digital, all these different companies.
He literally did a stealth money raise.
Exactly.
Stealth. He was basically money raise. Doing a money raise through acquisition.
Right. Right. And he was trying left. So he prolonged the blow up of FTX. So you could say that this whole theory that, you know, there's a quick wick down when everything blows up and gets liquidated and then we rebuild. I still believe in that theory because I just think that FTX was able to prolong its blow up for a few months. Whereas like, if you imagine that they didn't, like they just immediately filed bankruptcy, which I think morally speaking, that's what they obviously should have done. If they had just blown up with everybody else like Luna, then, you know, we would be in a much different position now. Like, I think we would have wicked down to like 12 to 15K and then, you know, it would have been all doomsday. And by now we would have probably rebuilt a lot bigger than where we're at after having prolonged all of this. So I don't know. That's the bottom is in theory. Then we also gave the theory of more liquidations to come. I don't really know. I'm kind of right on the fence for both.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said, it's interesting that like the BlockFi news pretty much created no reaction. Like Bitcoin was just like, meh. It's like, you know, new day, same story.
Right.
You know, we might be at the point where bad news is no news. But who knows? You know, obviously if a big domino fell, because that's the thing. In the end, it's like, what's the catalyst? You know, obviously crypto and Bitcoin can grind lower without a catalyst. But generally, in terms of these big price movements, there's usually a catalyst. Right. So what's the next catalyst, if there is one? Again, everything is, you know, personal perspective and personal investment scenarios. Because like me personally, like I don't give a damn whether this is the bottom or whether we go down to 13. You know, I have money just eroding, sitting at big limit orders down in the 13s. If we get down there, great. If we don't, then all right, that sucked. Didn't get to put that money to use, but then I'll just probably roll it back in to, you know, staked in terms of stable coin yield.
BHBD, BUSD.
Yeah, I'll probably, honestly, I'd probably add even more to BHBD because I wouldn't plow it all back into just regular stables. I'd probably move some more of that into BHBD. I already moved a good chunk when I was freeing it up to have it on hand to have these limit orders out there and do a little bit of buying, you know. I mean, I had basically a limit order when we first broke sitting at 16.4 and, you know, that got filled and then we did go a little bit lower, but now it's, my buy point seemed to be spot on, at least in terms of where we were going to level out. So I don't know. I'm starting to lean towards nibbling on a little more here just because, I don't know, maybe I'm getting bored. But either way, I'm leaving that fresh powder sitting in those orders down below in case this is not the bottom.
Yeah, smart. It's very smart. Yeah.
I mean, in the end, none of it matters because what am I doing? I'm basically waiting 2 years, you know, for the next bull market. And that's assuming it happens, you know, within the next 2 years. That's all I'm doing. Right. I'm literally just buying coin to have to sit and wait another 2 years before I can have crypto riches. But
that's how it goes.
We shall see. In the meantime, just earn yield and stack.
Stake and stack. Or stack and yes. I think stack and stake would be better. Stack and stake.
I mean, stack. I like stake and stake. You stake and then it gives you more coins that you can stack.
True. All right.
I'm going with stake and stack.
Stake and stack. It with sounds like a with a restaurant. Side of
fries.
Yeah. Addicted saying a lot of money out on the outside is looking to get in at a cheaper price. Bitcoin price drops 3% and volume goes up 400%. Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that. I mean, when you see us wick down to like, you know, low 16,000s, you see almost an immediate buyback. Like right now we're at 16.3. It does seem like there's a lot of capital sitting there trying to get in.
There are people, and that's the thing, like everyone wants to buy lower. Everyone thinks it's going lower. So it's like, I don't know if that's going to happen. But yeah, there's money on the sideline. We both just said, you know, we recently helped normies get fresh money in. And that's the thing too. Anyone that's like, I don't know, smart for lack of a better word, realizes that like, holy shit, like this stuff just came down huge. Like this is when I should be getting into it, as opposed to the majority of the FOMO crowd that is piling into Bitcoin when it's at 50K and surging higher. And then you know, now it's down here and they're like, I'm not touching this. It's like, huh? It's like, this is when you buy. This is
right.
But that's the herd mentality.
Buy high, sell low. That's the herd mentality.
Yeah, indeed.
It's like they can't help it. It's crazy.
My problem is I buy low, ride it high, and then ride it all the way back low.
You got to take profits. You got to take profits.
I'm too loyal. I have a very strong loyalty gene in my personality. I'm loyal to all the projects and the coins I believe in.
I like that.
But that's not so fun. I wish I would have sold, because then I could be buying back twice as much down at these prices. I mean, that holds even true for like Polycub and Cub. Had I sold any of that at higher prices, I could be buying back twice as much.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, we got the next bull market. So just stack for that and then.
Stack for the next
bull market. Don't forget the lesson.
Like they say, third time's a charm. So the next bull market will be my third bull market. I'll get it right. Which at the same time, if I'm doing it wrong, then I'm pretty happy because things are still green overall.
Yep.
That's one thing I am so blessed with. I've literally never been in the red in my crypto career. But a lot of that has to do with buying some Bitcoin in 2016 when it was at 600 a coin.
Yeah, I mean, that helps. Yeah, I think I was in the red in 20. Actually, I don't even know if that I was. Because I mean, I was buying Bitcoin down at like 300. I was buying Ethereum at like 50 bucks. I remember I bought a lot. And then I had the ETH miner. So yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Because in 2018, all I remember is, you know, crypto portfolio, you know, I felt like I was super rich, and then crypto portfolio tanked. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm not. And then, So that's, you know, I guess it's a good question. Like, was I still green, but I just felt poor because I was looking at the numbers too much?
Could have been.
Possible.
I was still green because I didn't really have much money into crypto at that time. Like now I do, like over the last, you know, especially last year is when I finally started putting fresh capital in a lot, even with like, you know, at one point just having a bunch of stable coins staked, earning yield, which, you know, a lot of those I've used to buy crypto in the last month or so. But yeah, I just look at it, I'm like, damn, like I'm green, but I ain't green a lot. Which like I'm probably technically right now my worst position in terms of actual, like, you know, performance and return. Like somehow I fudged up 2021, 2022. So I will admit I was a buyer on much of this like ride down because it just kept going lower. Like I just kept buying it through the buy points. You know, I bought Bitcoin at 30 and 29, and then I bought it again at, you know, 22.5. And there was some, I'm lucky that I don't have really many or any really bad buys. My only really bad buy is Polkadot. That is literally the only terrible buy I've made, I think, in my crypto career. It's like, I was buying more of that up in the low 30s and mid 20s, and that's sitting at $5 now. So that one wasn't
not good.
Yeah, that was no bueno. You know, I don't really have an opinion in terms of my personal experience with like Polycub and Cub, because I don't know, you know, if I was outright buyers of those. I mean, I might have been to pair with some stuff, but I didn't really keep track of that good enough.
I did end up buying a lot of Polycub on the way down, which, you know, in hindsight, you know, hindsight being 2020, I would have waited and now bought it here where it's like dirt cheap. Same with Cub, bought a lot.
Well, like, actually, you know, that's right. I forgot about that. I never, because I bought a bunch of Cub going into the Polycub launch. So I bought a bunch of Cub at 35 and 40 cents. So that's my one. Bad Cub move. So yeah, I'm bag holding hard on that. But It's still, you know, whatever. It's still staked earning yield, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal with Cub, right? Stake it for 52 weeks, earn 35% APY compounding in your Cub position. And then, you know, 52 weeks from now, if we continue the pace of growth in multi-token bridge revenue that we've been at the last, you know, and, you know, we got another 12 months, if you stake today for 52 weeks, then, you know, potentially Cub is deflationary by the time your Cub unlocks and you've earned 35% yield. And that's the Cub recovery plan. Cub has entered rehab.
The Cub recovery fund.
Yeah.
That's how you create your own Cub recovery fund. Yeah. Yep. I don't know why even when the airdrop was winding down, like I should have probably gotten out, but I was just too stubborn. I just wanted all the airdrops. but it is what it is. So cool.
It is what it well, is.
That was a good AMA full of all sorts of updates and even, you know, kind of like potential ideas for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. A Nomad Soul is going to have a lot of clips for us from this one.
Hell yeah. And obviously the recap post is up. It's already pushed up in the Leo TV chatter, but that's got all the things pretty much we talked about.
Upload the cat.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Let's get some more Leo tokens. You got to keep stacking. Got to get to my 100K Leo.
Oh, yeah. Are you pretty close now, right? Weren't you at like 80K before?
I got 80K powered up, and then I have 15,000 that is liquid right now. Because I'm not sure what I want to do with that. Because a lot of this was, I had unstaked some P-Leo. So I powered up 30,000 of that. And then I got 15 that's chilling. That's, I don't know. It's just nice to have a little liquid for a change. So
yes, having some liquidity is very important.
Yeah, that's usually my problem. Obviously, right now is not the time to buy liquidity, but back when prices were higher, I mean, shit, right. 50 cent Cub. I'd love to have 15,000 Leo liquid at 50 cents. I'd have 50 cent Leo.
But. Yeah.
In the meantime, just keep earning yield.
Keep stacking.
Yep. In fact, I saw I had a mystery delegation. I figured out where that came from.
Oh. So
I'm voting hard, making sure that's being put to work.
Like that. Yeah, we didn't even, I mean... We don't have to go into it in depth, but before we jump off, I'll give the give a little alpha. We didn't even talk about the new Leo UI at all.
Mm.
We've made really good progress on the UI front. So yeah, I mean, I'm still hopeful we're going to have it out before the end of the year. That's our target. So if you're in Discord, you can see the this is what the UI looks like right now. So I've been playing around with it a lot and we've been developing it and coming up with some cool stuff. So right now we're actually working on the notifications page, which is going to be really cool. I mean, like the big thing for the notifications page is one thing I hate with the current UI and really any UI on Hive is that it's very difficult to engage with people that, you know, reply to you and comment on your stuff. And I think it would just be really cool to have like an engagement center, kind of like how Twitter works, where you can like really easily engage with people who are engaging with you without leaving the notifications UI. Because engagement is everything. So yeah, I'll probably by the next AMA, I hope I will have the notifications page ready, and I'll be, you know, I'll share it with you guys, and it'll be cool.
Nice.
Nifty likes the dark mode.
Most
yeah, like I'm very excited about this UI. I think it's going to change everything for Leo. I think it's going to completely change the way you use it. Obviously, we're kind of merging it with Project Blank. And, you know, it turns out Project Blank is actually Leo Finance. Who would have thought?
Turns out.
Who would have
thought? No airdrop for the cat.
Nope. No airdrops. Just building value. I think that's what we learned is like, you know, Poly Cub and the Cub stuff, I think a lot of lessons were learned, but build the fundamental value.
No more free money.
Yeah,
free money era is over.
Yeah.
The punch ball has run out.
Right.
Now everyone's got a hangover.
At least you'll have a new UI to have a hangover on.
Yes. Awesome stuff.
Sweet. So next week will be what? December 6th. All right.
Craziness. A few more when soon's
till the end of the year.
This year.
Yeah. Yeah. We hopefully the last AMA of December will have the new Leo UI ready and we'll all be using it. And it'll obviously be an open alpha, so we'll all be using it, but hopefully.
We shall see.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Actually, I just thought of something. The last AMA of the year technically would be December 27th, which the cat will be on an airplane. Actually, I might be in New York still. I could probably do it right before I go to the airport. I'll have to do it from New York, though. I won't have all my things.
All right, just let me know.
Crappy microphone and weird background, but so yeah, because I was looking, I was like, oh yeah, the last Tuesday of the year is actually December 27th.
Yeah.
So coolness. All right.
Sweet.
Have a good one, everyone. See you next week.
See ya.
All right. Later, Kel.
Peace.